Thursday, beautiful sunny day here in Motown, and I decided to dedicate the entire 3 hours today to a very important subject that I think has been neglected by the mainstream media. So today we're going to do that. We are going to dive into a very lengthy, and comprehensive coverage on Bo the dog, Bo the first dog. No, I might talk about it a little bit later on. In addition, I'll squeeze it in with the global economic meltdown, North Korea, tea baggers. I might mention it because I've not yet uttered the words Bo the dog on this program, so I want to be able to do that. We got lots coming up. Got a lot of email and listener feedback, so we're going to be addressing some of that today. Talking autos, all kinds of things in the hopper on this Thursday, but. Obviously, I wanted to start with the reaction. You know, the shot heard across the bow yesterday. It has the major wake up call, the stroke of genius, if you will, called the Tea Parties and the aftermath of those and other things. Who wrote on the backs of that ridiculous event? Mark Carlin from BuzzFlash is here to join me in analyzing. This enormous event, this epic event in our nation's history. We always like having Mark Carlin, who is the editor of one of the best white websites out there for one of the longest times out there. Mark Carlin is with us. Hi, Mark.
Hey, hello to the Motor City, Nancy, and to the entire United States.
Yeah, absolutely. We are big and growing. Now, listen, so what was the action in Chicago? Mark's based in Chicago. What kind of Tea Party action did you have? Because we talked to Texas yesterday. We just set this up. It's pretty funny. We talked to the head of the Texas Democratic Party yesterday. They had Glenn Beck. They had Rick Perry, who's calling for secession, kind of, sort of. And who else? They had some other characters. We only had Joe the Plumber here in Lansing, Michigan. So we got gypped, but... which I got criticized for because that's not a good term. I didn't realize that. So anyways, we'll get into that. But who did you have?
Well, actually, Michael Steele, if you recall, had wanted to speak here. But the PR person who actually had been coordinating the public relations at the behest of Dick Armey's organization and Fox News, I presume, actually is in Chicago, the PR firm that sort of did the media work on this. And he publicly, many listeners may know this, we had this on BuzzFlash, the fellow Eric Odom, turned down Mike Steele. He said, we don't want any Republicans here. But it was really sort of Michael Steele who was singled out because Republicans did appear, along with Fox News personalities, around the country. And for some reason, they just didn't want Steele. Maybe because they wanted to keep a record of having no blacks presence in any of these tea parties.
I doubt that. I think he's just not nutty enough for them, Mark. But so where was the tea party in Chicago?
It was at what is called the Daily Center here, which is where the famous sculpture is by Picasso.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bit of tape going around. We had it up on BuzzFlash yesterday of a CNN reporter sort of being accosted by the teabaggers in Chicago. It wasn't that large of a group, but it was very rowdy, and it didn't really make much sense. As many teabaggers around the nation seem to have signed taxation without representation. Of course, that was at a time that that phrase, when we didn't have representation, we were under monarchical rule. Everyone who participated in the so-called protest and said taxation without representation obviously are being inaccurate and failed high school history class, because they have two senators and a congressperson. And they're represented, but as John Stewart said on TV, it's not that there's taxation without representation, it's simply that they lost the last election.
Yeah. So, because Stephen Colbert did that too. Hey, Mark, you and I think so much alike, because it's funny. I had seen a video of Elizabeth Warren, who is she heads the Congressional Oversight Panel for the TARP funds, a professor at Harvard. I saw a video of her really speaking on Fire Dog Lake with Jane Hampshire and on her website, and or doing something up there. And then I saw this video on Jon Stewart. We're going to be going through that. Her explanation of what has transpired on that. And I went to your website to see what was on BuzzFlash.com, what was the hot stuff, and there you had it right on the front page. First thing I said, oh, Mark and I are right on the phone. Now, wasn't that an amazing interview? And we're going to be going through this, but and so timely, because these guys, they didn't even know. Yesterday, my big point was, they're out there, whatever the cause is, the one that they're talking about was taxation, right? Well, the tax rates haven't changed yet, except for 95% of working Americans got a tax cut, but the upper tax rate hasn't been changed yet. So there were just all these reasons that they were throwing in of the bailouts and whatnot. I think she just did a brilliant, brilliant job of trying to explain this to Jon Stewart and thereby the rest of us.
Yeah, she's quite an extraordinary person. There was a report last week, Bloomberg News Service had this, and it got picked up by a few of the corporate mainstream papers, but not much, and certainly New York Times and Washington Post didn't give it its proper due. Ms. Warren, Professor Warren, is the head of what amounts to the congressional oversight position. That is part of the original creation of the so-called TARP. And Jon Stewart, as you saw, was quite funny with these acronyms last night, like TARP. And so she was part of it. Her position was part of the agreement when this was in a rush set up, when suddenly one weekend, then Treasury Secretary Paulson, former head of Goldman Sachs, as Jon Stewart pointed out, decided just in one weekend that our economy was collapsing. It took him one weekend to figure this out. He seemed to not have a clue about it before. Mm-hmm. And then on Monday, the Bush administration said, well, you better give us $700 billion, otherwise Wall Street is going to go through a meltdown. As part of that agreement, Congress demanded, the original Bush agreement, that there be an overseer in Congress to be accountable to Congress and the American people as to the progress of the distribution of the $700 billion. Professor Warren was appointed by Congress to that position. What she essentially did on Jon Stewart last night was remarkable in a tactful way, and he asked her this at one point, like, what are you doing on The Daily Show? You know, and she said, in essence, and I'm paraphrasing her, I have no recourse. This is the only way I can get my message out. And her message, basically, as you saw in that interview, was that the Treasury Department won't fully answer her questions as to how this money has been spent, how it's been distributed, on what basis. There's billions of dollars unaccounted for that they haven't told her about. And she doesn't believe the way it is being distributed is effective. And in fact, today we have a headline up on BuzzFlash that says that interest lending is down by the banks in February, which is the last month that it's accounted for. And so if the purpose was to open up the credit market, as of February, it hasn't yet. It was an extraordinary moment, because you had the person representing Congress and therefore representing the American people oversee TARP, who's saying, even we still love Obama at a BuzzFlash, But his Department of Treasury and Geithner are not being transparent and are not telling Congress or the American people what is really going on with this program. And that was the essence of her message last night, is she's saying, I can't get the information.
Well, I think she also said, yes, she said that. I also think, and the reason that may be, I'm going to just say it, the reason that it might be that they're not as transparent as she would like, is because when they reveal the stress tests, that there could be, because they haven't gotten to where they need to be, there could be panic, financial market panic. Just as they start to recover, you know, this is my guess. The theory is, hey, you know what, until these guys get a little further along, and that's why this whole Goldman Sachs giving the money back thing is, it sounds good, but it's not so good, because then whoever doesn't give their money back is, we know, they're bad banks, and it could cause a panic and a run. Anyways, I'm going to let you finish on the other side, respond to that. I think that's what she's saying. But she also, I think, made brilliantly the case for why, as I keep saying, we have to go in and re-regulate, like, regulation on steroids to avoid these financial booms and busts and panics again. And I think she made that case very well. She didn't throw any tea bags. She wasn't dressed up like a patriot. What else? No Hitler signs. She just made a really cogent point about what we need to do. So Mark Carlin's with me. We're talking teabaggers. We're talking a lot of things. I want to get to Glenn back as well. I know one of your buddies. And we'll take your calls too. 1-888-64-NANCY. Or 1-888-646-2629. That's the actual number. 1-888-646-2629. Did you see Elizabeth Warren? We're going to play some sound from that coming up on Jon Stewart. And what'd you think of it? Because she's super duper smart. All that coming up on the Nancy Skinner Show. All right. Finally, some common sense coming out. Elizabeth Warren on The Daily Show. We're getting educated about the global economic meltdown from the comedy channel, Comedy Central, that needed to be beamed at every teabagging locale across the country so that these folks who are out protesting, they don't even know what they're protesting, could have been edumacated by Elizabeth Warren. It is the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner. Mark Carlin is with me from BuzzFlash, the editor of BuzzFlash.com, a super-duper website. Dave wants to jump in here from Long Beach, California. Hi, Dave.
Hi. He was mentioning the signs that they seem to have backwards. They said no representation without taxation.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think you've talked about Digby, the hullabaloo, the blog.
I'm sorry, you're losing me here, Dave. What is it? So who said?
I thought you mentioned the blog called Digby at Hullabaloo.
I didn't. But who said no taxation without representation? That was what Jon Stewart was making fun of. That is what he said, because they are represented. There was a vote.
Well, yeah, no, they're putting it backwards, and there's a reason they're doing it. It's saying no representation without taxation. What it is they're protesting that the they're protesting the people that are making so.
All righty, so I'm sorry we've lost a Dave. Dave, call back. We're having some technical difficulties here, but we have Mark. Mark, what he's trying to say, Dave was trying to say that they're saying it backwards. No representation without taxation, and there's a point in that. Do you know what that is?
All I can say is that I've never teabagged around with Glenn Beck, nor will I ever teabag around with Glenn Beck, and I just want to say that publicly.
Now, what do you make of that? So let's move on to that. What do you make of great fodder, this innuendo going on with the teabagging and Dick Armey, and just like I said, was it a a surge of success or what? It's endless humor.
It certainly is, and anytime Rick Perry wants to succeed and dip his tea bag in the Rio Grande, that's fine with me as long as I don't have to view it.
But you know what? It's working, Mark. This is what scares me. I'm reading this article from Time magazine about Glenn Beck. When he moved from CNN Headline News, where, you know, no one watched him, really, he went to Fox. His viewership doubled. He now, Fox has ratings as a result of doing this that are twice, they are more than CNN and MSNBC combined. And, you know, the characters, obviously, the O'Reilly and those guys, but Beck's ratings are huge. Is this just like, you know, the train wreck, the car scene where we're all gawking at him, or is he like building a organic following of crazy?
I think there's a group of people who feel dispossessed economically, but they have been spoon-fed by Fox and Rush Limbaugh, and so they're confused. And that's why at these rallies, they said so many things that didn't make any sense whatsoever. And you had a whole disparate group of people there. You had gun people there because I think Obama's going to confiscate their guns. And, you know, it wasn't really just an anti-tax sort of thing. That was their theme. But it really was all these people who kind of feel left out by the economy and many other things. This was not the wealthy in Chicago who gathered. I saw a bunch of people going there. These were middle-class people. And it's the erosion of the middle class, of course, that Obama's trying to prevent going any further, given that the tax rate and redistribution of income has shifted so dramatically toward the wealthy.
Right. So turning populism on its head, is what it is.
Well, a lot of these people, because they've listened so much to Limbaugh and Beck and O'Reilly and Hannity, they think the enemy is liberalism, and that's the cause of their problems. And so now when you have a liberal in the White House, Glenn Beck comes along, and he's a classic demagogue. Yep. I mean, his show is shot.
My dear friend Mark, I am out of time, unfortunately, so you got 30 seconds. You want to wrap?
He's
a clown.
I would just say, you know, if real men don't drink tea. That's my conclusion of this whole thing.
And there's more than one meaning to that. Mark Carlin from BuzzFlash.com. Always great to have you on, Mark.
Thank you.
Be
so
well,
much.
My friend. Okay. I got it. Did you get it? 1-888-64-NANCY, the number to the program. Good is going to come out of this after all. Nancy Pelosi is calling for a panel to probe Wall Street. The Democratic House Speaker saying the American people are demanding discipline and accountability after the multi-billion-dollar federal bailouts. And she's promising to create a legislative commission with broad oversight to investigate the causes and irregularities of Wall Street and the full cost to taxpayers. So this is very, very good news. Who was it? Jeff, who called in the other day, and he was all upset about, we got to get to the bottom of this. Crimes were committed, and I said, start a blog, Jeff. Let's get Congress on it. So maybe he did. But she said they investigated that something similar back during the Depression. The Pecora Commission was a bipartisan investigative body that was established in 1932 in the Senate to examine the causes and abuses of the Wall Street crash of 1929 and to prevent a repeat. She said they investigated what happened in the markets, including conflicts of interest and irregularities that set off such devastating effects on the U.S. economy. When the commission issued its finding during the administration of FDR, they had tangible recommendations which helped generate widespread public support for major banking system reforms and new security laws. So, amen, Sister Nancy. That is very good news indeed. So something good may have come out of this, although I suspect it was already in the works and the tea parties were not the tipping point. Here's my question at the Nancy Skinner Show, 1-888-64-NANCY or 1-888-646-2629. Who do you find more credible when it comes to their explanation of the global economic meltdown? Would it be Glenn Beck, Fox News host Glenn Beck, or would it be Congressional Oversight Panel legislator, I guess, I don't know what that title is. Her name is Elizabeth Warren. She's a professor of law at Harvard. And we're going to go through a little bit of both of their explanations what we're going through. And you can weigh in on the intellectual firepower of these two contestants in terms of relating to the American public. Here's Glenn Beck, first of all. This is their coverage of the Tea Party day.
All right, time for you to go to the Alamo, where Glenn Beck landed right in the middle of a massive tea party. Glenn, I see that the beautiful sight behind you. It's quite amazing. Where are you?
I am in San Antonio, Texas.
It looks like you're there with your friends. Are these people you know?
Greta, when I heard about the tea parties, quite honestly, I thought that it was too early for the tea parties because we haven't been hit by the taxes yet that have to come. But I have to tell you, when the tea parties started to roll and everybody started to do them, I found out that they were doing a tea party here at the Alamo, and I thought there wasn't a better place to do it. This is the place. Everybody's always heard, you know, draw a line in the sand. This is where it happened. They drew a line in the sand and said, enough is enough.
All right, I'm not quite getting the metaphor there, since ultimately the Texian soldiers were creamed in that. How interesting that President Obama is making his first trip to Mexico as well. But so that's Glenn Beck. Let me give you a little bit more, because we touched on Governor Perry yesterday, who's also he has a solution, succession.
I talked to the governor earlier today, and I don't know how popular or not popular he is here, but I tell you,
among this crowd.
His words ring true to an awful lot of people, not just in Texas, but I think a lot of people all around the country. There are movements. They've taken the original documents between James Madison and Thomas Jefferson, and in several states, I believe it's 23 now, they are passing this in their legislature, which says you don't have any more rights in the Constitution than those that are outlined, and federal government, you need to back off.
Okay, so we're talking, this is secession talk, apparently, 10th Amendment sort of thing. That's their solution to this. Let me juxtapose that with Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren is she chairs the Congressional Oversight Panel on TARP funds. She's a professor of law at Harvard, teaches all kinds of bankruptcy, commerce, all kinds of law. She was on Jon Stewart, trying to explain, because there is, obviously I have said this, and I try to explain this all the time if you listen to this show. I've been trying to explain this, not as well as Elizabeth Warren, why we have to support the banks in this system and what we do next. I'm trying to explain that, but she did a brilliant job. Here's Elizabeth Warren and Jon Stewart.
How much money has been sent to them, and what have these companies done with it?
Well, we think it's about $590 billion.
Now, you said, you said we think. Do they have Excel? Do they have a spreadsheet that they're keeping track, these companies?
Actually, the companies are not the ones who are supposed to be keeping track. It's actually supposed to be Treasury keeping track.
Are they?
There's a little dispute over some of the numbers, but we're working on it.
All right, so this is about TARP. She is overseeing TARP funds specifically, which was begun under the Bush administration. And then he asked, okay, here, what do we get from this? That's what Stewart wants.
Wait a minute. So we gave them $100, and for that we got $66 worth of product.
That's right. And when you do that enough times, it turns out that we gave away $78 billion.
Out of the first $350 billion?
Yeah.
What's the deal we got on the second 350?
Well, it's not all gone yet. And some of the money has been committed to the mortgage foreclosure plan, which I think is a really good idea. Some of the money is now being committed to PPIP.
Are you about to curse? Is that an acronym?
Yeah.
PPIP. I'm not even going to try on this one. What does PPID stand for?
I don't remember.
Okay, because I do. I think it's Public-Private Investment Partnership. And here's a key point in all of this. One of the things that you didn't hear in that. We had to give the banks the money, the $350 billion, because they had all these toxic assets. They were not loaning money to businesses. They nobody could evaluate what their banks, what their balance sheets looked like anymore. We were in murky land. So the credit markets froze up because they had all these crazy instruments going on, right? So there was a blanket, we're going to loan all the banks money. So we don't know, because we don't know which ones are good, which ones are bad. We don't know. And so just blanket put it out there, because if you only loan to some banks, then it would be obvious that those banks had problems, right? If you didn't loan to others, they would be the good banks. So then there would be a run on those banks. So that was the beginning of that. Turns out, as she said, we didn't get our money's worth in that original $350 billion during the Bush administration. The way remember it was a three-page memo that was spelled out in? Then they were all upset when the fiscal stimulus bill was passed and it was 1,100 pages. They preferred the three-pager, apparently, but it didn't stipulate. We didn't get what we wanted out of it. 60, I think she said, what, 60, 66 cents on the dollar. But note in that she also said that some of the remaining money now is going to go toward home foreclosure. Part of it. So there was $700 billion passed, right? $350 was the first thing, the TARP. Now what they're going to do is they're going to put some of it towards a new home foreclosure program to stop the downward spiral in housing prices, which is really good. Because you know what number I saw today in the Detroit papers? In 1 year's time, we have lost home values in Detroit 52.7%. The median home value has lost. Imagine that. 52.7% of its value. That is decidedly not good. The rest of it's going to go toward this PPIP, okay? This public-private investment partnership to get the toxic assets off the books, to essentially gamble with a little, yes, there's some gambling going on here, the taxpayer dollars, and to incentivize somebody buying these assets, because they really are, they're mortgages. I mean, there's no way these houses in Detroit, I mean, there's some beautiful houses here, trust me. This is where the auto industry was formed. The suburbs are great. The idea that a home value could fall 53% and that there's not going to be an upside recovery to some of these beautiful homes here, there's going to be value to that. So that's what the government is trying to do. Here's her explanation of PPIP.
I remember. It's Public-Private Investment Program. I'm sorry, it just took me a minute.
Public-Private Investment Program.
PPIP. And so...
Thank God that that's what you were investing in, because I was thinking something entirely different. Continue.
So the idea is we're going to put in some money, and private investors are going to put in some money. We the taxpayers. The taxpayers are going to take a lot of risk if it doesn't work out.
But we took the risk originally. We're the ones who lost 40% of our investment. They're giving us they're giving us $66 on the $100 that we've already invested $100 and gotten 60 back on. So we're really down
34.
PPID.
Not listen carefully.
We're down twice that.
Well, actually we're down more than that, because the value of the stock dropped and the value of that $66 actually shrank after that.
To so what?
We don't actually have...
All right. Hold on.
They've told you nothing.
It's not that exactly.
Can you find... What kind of powers do you have? to crush them? Do you have subpoena power? Do you have...
No, but look, what I can do is I can talk about this. And that's exactly what I am going to do.
So my good buddy Mark Carlin was just a little bit off there when he said that they are refusing to hand over that information. She, Elizabeth Warren, said it's not that exactly. They gave them, we got stock in exchange for this whole deal, right? So when the value falls, and it's an ever-changing number, and there are lots of banks. So that number isn't just like, you know, you just don't Twitter the current combined gross asset value. It's not handy all the time. We know it is falling, and it continues to fall. That's why we're stabilizing the economy, right? All right, John, you're going to make me take a break before we get to the really, really good part? Because we'll do that. We'll take a break. Coming back, it's Glenn Beck versus Elizabeth Warren here. Who's making more sense? Just rally? Just rally the Patriots at the Alamo because they're angry? Or explain to the American people in a very cogent way why this had to be and what has to be done. Two completely different approaches. One being, I would say, intellectual. The other one being, what's the word? I'll leave that to you to decide. If one is an intellectual adult approach to explaining this, what was the other one? There's a lot of choice words. 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 1-888-646-2629. That's the number to jump in on the Glenn Beck versus Elizabeth Warren knock'em sock'em debate. I would love to see these two in a debate. That is a pay-per-view event, my friends, on the Nancy Skinner Show. Maybe we'll do that.
Remember what my father said? He said, son, life is simple. It's either cherry.
Sleep at the wheel again, baby. You're drifting over the line, yeah. Your hands are tied, but you're losing grip quickly. Fix, make a new redesign.
Referred to today as a
spelling right now, but
well, I think we know. You referred to this as a movement. What happens after today? Is this a one-time deal, or are we going to see more of this? Are Texans going to do more of this?
She's talking to me. Back off. I don't think so, Greta.
You think this is more than a one-time deal?
Here's what I have been talking about with people and with the audience that that I have on the radio, and that is, this is an opportunity for people to connect with each other and to see that they're not alone and to see, oh my gosh, I didn't know you. Really? You believe in this too? And be able to connect with each other. You know, I think a lot of Americans, I know I am, we're slugs. And until you keep pushing us up against the wall and pushing up us against the wall and pushing against the wall, you know, we want to just sit back and relax and just watch American Idol or something. But I think now is the time that we're all like, oh crap, okay, and we get up. I don't think anybody's really ready to sit down yet.
Okay, that's Glenn Beck's prescription for the future. He just said it's just a movement. What do we do? How do we channel it? How do we fix it so it never happens again? Any of that? I didn't hear any of that. It is the Nancy Skinner Show. 1-888-64-NANCY, 646-2629, the actual number. Contrast that with Elizabeth Warren, who oversees the Congressional Panel on TARP Funds. And here's what she says we have to do in the future.
What are the repercussions here for these? Why isn't the first thing we do is to say no one will be allowed to be too big to fail? That is a license to commit poor banking practice.
Okay, so what you're asking is if we can get this bus pulled out of the ditch, the
yes.
economy, what does the road look like going forward?
Yes.
Because this really is the big question. Let me start that question in 1792. Okay, young country, George Washington's in his first term. And we have a credit freeze. There's a financial panic. Every 10 to 15 years, there's a financial panic in our history. You just look at it. And there's a big collapse, big trouble, people lose their farms, wiped out, until we hit the Great Depression. We come out of the Great Depression and you say, you know, we can do better than this. We don't have to go back to this kind of boom and bust cycle. We come out of the Great Depression with three regulations. FDIC insurance, it's safe to put your money into banks. Glass-Steagall, banks won't do crazy things, and some SEC regulations. We go 50 years without a financial panic, without a crisis.
A couple of recessions in there, some bad times.
Some recessions, but no crisis. No banks failing. No big, you know, no big crisis.
SNL,
like that.
You know, that sort of thing.
Well, now, wait a minute. I said 50 years. Because then what happens is we say, regulation, it's a pain, it's expensive, we don't need it. So we start pulling the threads out of the regulatory fabric. And what's the first thing we get? We get the SNL crisis. 700 financial institutions fail. 10 years later, what do we get? Long-term capital management, when we learned that when something collapses one place in the world, it collapses everywhere else. Early 2000s, we get Enron, which tells us the books are dirty. And what is our repeated response? We just keep pulling the threads out of the regulatory fabric. So we have two choices. We're going to make a big decision probably over about the next 6 months. And the big decision we're going to make is it's going to go one way or the other. We're going to decide basically, hey, we don't need regulation. You know, it's fine. Boom and bust, boom and bust, boom and bust. And good luck with your 401k. Or alternatively, we're going to say, you know, we're going to put in some smart regulation. It's going to adapt to the fact that we have new products. And what we're going to have going forward is we're going to have some stability and some real prosperity for ordinary folks.
And that's socialism. That, by the way, that is the first time in probably 6 months to a year that I felt better. Something, I don't know what it is that you just did right there, but for a second, that was like financial chicken soup for me. That was, thank you. That actually put things in a perspective that made a little bit of sense, and I really do appreciate that.
That's why we...
And good luck with that, and if they don't give you transparency, you tell me, because I'll keep talking about it on the same network after Mind of Mencia.
All right, so that's why I really wanted to bring this to you, that discussion today, because I think it was very enlightening, Elizabeth Warren saying, okay, on the one hand, Glenn Beck's solution, we're just going to get more teabaggers, and we're just going to stop watching American Idol and gather on the streets because we're mad. Maybe it'll result in Newt 2012. A lot of people are thinking really about his presidential election. On the other hand, we are going to be, as Elizabeth Warren said, needing to go back to the drawing board on regulation, figure this out, then fix it. Fix it so it never happens again. And that's what the president's saying. But I think she did a great job on Jon Stewart, and I thought it was important to bring to you the contrast in intellectual firepower from these two movements that happened yesterday. I'm sure they don't get that. All right, coming up, we're going to talk about Bo after a little discussion on North Korea. 1-888-64-NANCY on the Nancy Skinner Show. Talk about Bo on the Nancy Skinner Show. Bo would be so much more refreshing than, say, Kim Jong-il. So much easier to potty train, too. 1-888-64-NANCY, the number to the program. Let's see. I should mention to you that that you can KTLK, our fantastic affiliate in Los Angeles, the stream is down. A lot of people stream the show from there. So if you go to our website, NancySkinnerLive.com, there is another link. We're going to have other links up. Juno, Alaska, and White Rose Society are streaming the show as well. So I just thought I'd mention that. 1-888-64-NANCY, the number to the program. Okay, we will get to Bo. I know it's very important. Very, very important topic. But there was this whole little issue of North Korea. Obviously, on April 5th, they had an illicit missile test, kind of a dud, essentially. But, you know, they're still at it. They are still obviously trying to pursue nuclear technology, and worse yet, put it into, have a vehicle to deliver it with the missile test technology. And so there was finally, the president spoke out and said, we got to do something about this, try to get the ever recalcitrant Security Council to do something. They issued a unanimous statement, a response, the UN Security Council, and Kim Jong-il basically said, you know, we're out of here. We don't want your stinking six-party talks. We're going to do our own thing. He demanded that the international UN inspectors remove the seals from the uranium enrichment facilities that they had been monitoring for peaceful purposes, supposedly, and get the heck out of North Korea. So that's what they did. So there's a big standoff now between this tin pot dictator of a nation of 23 million people. That's it. Okay. But also they've been proliferating and sharing their technology, both with uranium enrichment and missile technology, with other rogue actors. So what does one do when you're faced with this kind of situation, when you have 40,000 troops right across the border in South Korea? Claudia Rosette is a journalist in residence with the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Writes a weekly column on foreign affairs for Forbes.com and has addressed the issue heretofore and joins us now. Thank you, Claudia. Appreciate you being on the show.
Great to be here. Hi.
Okay. So well, great to have you. So, you know, this is the oldest, most boring rogue nation story that we've been fighting this one for a long time. Right? This guy, Kim Jong-il.
Oh, yeah. Since he took over from his daddy in 1994. We've been going through the same cycle. What's been different is he's getting more and more nuclear material. He's developing more and more missiles, and he's been selling or trading or bartering or in whatever way, spreading this stuff into places like the Middle East, which is really bad news.
Yeah. How do we know that, though? How can you assert that
well,
he's?
We know it because we know it in a number of ways. We know that North Korea helped Syria, a terror-sponsoring state, build an entire secret nuclear reactor on the Euphrates River with no apparent purpose except to produce plutonium for nuclear bombs. I mean, there was no electric grid they were going to hook it up to. This was a copy of the one that North Korea has used to produce plutonium for nuclear bombs. And that was something which the Israelis discovered and up in an airstrike in September of 2007. But if the Israelis had not done that, that reactor would probably be operational right now, and Syria would be producing plutonium for nuclear bombs. It gets worse. We also know that they've been involved with Iranian missile projects for a long time. In fact, I made a trip in 1991 to Pyongyang, the capital of North Korea, and flew in with a group of Iranians on the plane who were roaming around, you know, Pyongyang while I was. But we know that they've sold missile technology to Iran. We know that the godfather of the Pakistan nuclear program, where they produced atomic weapons, bombs, was visiting North Korea in the 90s, and the deal that was going on there is North Korea has been making missiles and selling them for a long time. You know, we've caught them doing it, we've seen them doing it, and of course, Pakistan was making the bomb. Well, when you have a nuclear bomb, you want a delivery system. So it was an unholy partnership. Mm-hmm. North Korea's missiles, Pakistan's bombs, and they were offering this. They were involved in Libya's illicit nuclear bomb program, which Gaddafi gave up in 2000.
Ah, interesting point. Okay, interesting point that you're touching on. So, I mean, and, you know, to cut to the chase here, you know, they've been up to no good. We tried to cut a deal with them back during the Clinton administration. So, you know, it's interesting you bring up Gaddafi in Libya because ultimately a similar situation, a madman essentially leading a nation in pursuit of weapons of mass destruction who eventually decided to give it up and cooperate with the world community.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not parallel. One big difference is Gaddafi gave up his nuclear program just a few months after Saddam Hussein was overthrown. And Gaddafi was terrified that George Bush was going to lead an attack that would do the same to Gaddafi. So,
well, that's not entirely true, Claudia. I have to. That was the PR line put out by the Bush administration. In fact, there had been talks ongoing about a deal for a very, very long time before the invasion of Iraq. They'd been trying. They'd had backdoor negotiations with Gaddafi, and there was a deal, tit for tat, quid pro quo kind of thing going on behind the scenes. Then, when the war broke out, everyone said, "Oh, he was so. This is Iraq really scared him into doing it."
No,
so.
Actually, I conclude that from my own reporting. And the talks were going on, but the deal was clinched at the point where Saddam Hussein had been overthrown. And, in fact, the news came out, the whole thing was signed and sealed just after Saddam Hussein was pulled from his spider hole in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And
I don't think we're going to put that to rest because there are two different theories on that, Claudia. But mm-hmm. the other thing that we must include in that discussion is the preemptive strike, the Bush Doctrine in Iraq also caused Pakistan and others to speed up their procurement of nuclear weapons because that was the only thing that could prevent them from a preemptive Bush Doctrine strike is to get a nuclear weapon. That would be their only, and North Korea. I mean, everyone accelerated their nuclear program because they were afraid that the conventional forces wouldn't ever hold up, and that's what the Iraq showed.
Let me back that up a second. Pakistan actually tested its first nuclear bomb in 1998. Back when Bill Clinton was president.
I'm saying they sped up their efforts.
And North Korea.
KQ Khan, the nuclear scientist, his activity, we found out later, really heated up after. That's when he went, Dr. Khan went nuts and really started to try and accelerate the program because of Iraq.
Well, again, the timing there doesn't quite match because AQ Khan was madly busy in the late 90s. And just around the turn of the millennium, by 2003, I think surely not that long after 2003, he was blown. They were put under house arrest. But let's set that aside
for
a minute.
Yeah, let's move. All right, that's the past. Let's go to the future here. You and your article, We Need Action, Not Words on North Korea. You are saying that you make quite a charge, I would say, in this piece by saying that, in fact, our president is... you are saying the leader of the free world is supporting. How perverse that among the collaborators keeping North Korea's tyrant Kim Jong-il in power should be the leader of the free world, the United States of America, that we are, in fact, collaborating to keep him in power. That is quite a charge, Claudia, to make.
Unfortunately, I think, I wish it weren't so, but the U.S. has been paying nuclear extortion, nuclear blackmail, bribery payoffs, to Kim Jong-il for years. I mean, this has been done under both Democrats and under Republicans, and it now looks set to go forward under President Obama. There are millions in a supplemental spending bill now before Congress slated to further go into North Korea. And the problem here is this supports Kim Jong-il. We greatly dignify him by the negotiations that have been going on. And the tantrums that North Korea throws has become a really standard pattern. You know, this is bargaining. When they say, we will never come to the table again, they're going to come to the table
again. Right, so what's the alternative? We know that. We understand that. And every time he does this is just to get more leverage in those negotiations. I've never thought six-party talks were particularly effective myself. But so what's the alternative, though, Claudia?
Well, the alternative is that Kim Jong-il's government has to go. You know, the phrase that nobody wants to hear the phrase regime change, but the truth is, as long as Kim Jong-il is in charge of North Korea, we're not going to get to a solution on this. He lives on nuclear weapons, he would rather have his own people.
Right, the starved to death. Right, we know all that.
Yeah.
So let's work with that. So you say regime change. Does that mean Iraq 2 with North Korea, where we have 40,000 troops across the right there in the DMZ, and we, you know, the population of millions of people, if they have, we know that they have conventional rocket forces ready to decimate, should we attack? And then what are the repercussions of a military invasion of North Korea in terms of trying to, the rest of the world, with all these partners you're talking about, with Pakistan's and...
The first thing we could do is, setting aside the question of a military invasion, is there are many things we could do to try to undermine Kim Jong-un without actually using military force.
Okay.
That we have not done.
Like what?
One is we could stop paying this nuclear blackmail to him. We could withdraw the kind of support that he gets both diplomatically by being the belle of the ball at these talks. You know, everybody waits to hear what will Kim Jong-il do. And we could stop sending him free food, which he has a record of diverting to the military from starving people. We could lean on the United Nations in a way we never have to help North Korean refugees. You know, one of the, if you care about human rights, one of the most horrendous crises in the world, and it is so, it just nobody does anything or pays any attention to it. It's people trying to escape from North Korea who have absolutely no safe haven they can go directly to, nothing. You know, China sends them back to North Korea, which does things like execute them in public.
Claudia, I'm up against my break. I do have, if you will stay, I have one more question for you. Are you able to do that, a holdover break?
Okay. I could do that. I have to take a, yeah.
Okay, great. We'll hold over because I don't want to cut you off. Claudia Rosette is with the Foundation for Defensive Democracies, saying it's time to get tough with North Korea. So what's the alternative? That's the thing. There's no good situation here. I've got an idea. I mentioned in jest, but I'm going to throw it out there to Claudia. 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 1-888-646-2629. Along in the interest of time, on the Nancy Skinner Show, I'm Nancy Skinner. 1-888-646-2629. That would be Nancy. That's 64 Nancy. All right. So we are talking. We're trying to figure out North Korea before the serious stuff. What to do about this really intransigent problem we've had with Kim Jong Il. Claudia Rosette is with me. She's a resident with the Foundation for Defense of Democracy. She wrote a piece in Forbes.com. Claudia, you're talking about, you know, the solution is not just talking. He's been doing this. And you in your piece say that we should have those Navy SEALs, those snipers that took out the Somali pirates at the negotiating table. Are you suggesting that we assassinate Kim Jong-il?
I'm suggesting that instead of sending the diplomats who keep arranging to pay bribes to him, in other words, in effect paying him to develop nuclear weapons, which is what's been happening under, what happened under both Bush and Clinton, we were paying protection racket money, basically. That we, I said it tongue-in-cheek, but not really. What I said was...
No, I'm really asking the question directly. You can assassinate, that's a choice.
Send someone to the negotiating table who is not going to be prone to try and appease Kim Jong-il. My suggestion was take those Navy SEALs who have on their record that they actually killed somebody who was threatening and holding hostage an American and have been pirating ships, and send them to the negotiating table and tell them they don't have to say anything.
Okay, so North Korea has called off talks right now. They're not talking to anyone, but to suggest really that the solution is to send assassins to, and that somehow they would engage with the negotiation.
Please don't misunderstand me. I wasn't suggesting we send assassins. I was suggesting we send somebody where the message will be,
or he's tougher, someone tougher. Right? That if you just had like a more macho guy with a swagger, with a bulge in his pants, kind of guy like George Bush, that, you know, that Kim Jong-il would really get scared?
Now, I was suggesting we send a message that reminds Kim Jong-il that we aren't just patsies.
And what is that message, though? I mean, it's so easy to say, get tough with him. But when you don't have military options on the table, you can't just say, be tougher.
Well, then you need to put military options on the table and say to him, if you want to play a game of chicken, you're dealing with a very, very big animal here. Because so far, to say to North Korea, we will not ever raise a hand. You can do whatever you want to, and all we'll do is come and offer to buy you off.
All right.
Is asking for real trouble, and you know
I am plumb out of time, Claudia. But we appreciate your coming on the program and sharing that view with us, Claudia Rosette. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
They cut her off there. Democracy for Defensive Foundation for Defensive Democracies. In my book, we kind of did that. It's called Iraq. Didn't work out so well for us all. We'll take your calls next. KTLA stream is not down. getting some feedback on that in the Nancy Skinner Show. They've changed their web address, is the dealio, okay? So it's not just KTLA.com. It is now KTLA1150.com. So if you go to KTLA1150.com, what is it? It's KTLKAM1150.com. Got that? KTLK. AM1150.com. And you got to say it like that, too, just like NancySkinnerLive.com. Thanks, Patty writes in. Love the show. We figured out that mess. If it were so easy with North Korea, if you're just joining me, I just had a guest on for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Get tough on them. Stop with all the sissy talks kind of group. And Claudia, very nice lady, though. But you know, here's the problem with this whole situation, folks. So if you haven't been following this because of Bo, which we're going to talk about Bo. I wanted to dedicate the whole show to a Portuguese water dog. But the deal is now he's, because of this unanimous resolution by the UN Security Council, he's like, screw you, you're out of here. We're done talking. Remove the seals and get out to the inspectors. He's talking tough. Now, most people will tell you this is just a negotiating tactic. He's upping the ante. It's called negotiations. It's called leverage. And Claudia Rosette just wrote her piece in Forbes. It said, we just got to stop all this sissy talking. Show them we mean business. Send in some of those Navy SEALs that killed the Somali pirates and have them negotiate. Yeah, we just got it tougher. Yeah, we've done that. It was called Iraq. Now, it didn't work out. Kind of caused the whole division of the Muslim world. What would this do? Not to mention the military option, but she really didn't. See, that's the problem. If you heard that, and I got a lot of emails from people yesterday saying that sometimes when I engage the other side in debate, I'm a wussy, essentially, and I'll read some of those for you, on, like Social Security and whatnot. I let people get their points out. And then I, you know, try to engage in debate. Maybe I wasn't so nice with Claudia. But it just bothers me when somebody says, here's what we got to do. We just got to be tougher. But she had no practical solutions to this. She said, well, you know, we got to tell them we mean business. Well, those are just words. And we don't have military options. If she's talking, you know, if she's talking about regime change as an assassination, you know, put it on the table. Don't skirt around it. She said she wasn't. So, but it's so easy to criticize a situation like this, and we've been there and done that. My view on this is, well, let's get Matt's view on it before you get my view on it. 1-888-64-NANCY, 1-888-646-2629. Do we go that route? Call them the axis of evil? Starve their people even more? I think that was one of her suggestions. Or do we, you know, do we replay Iraq with North Korea and see what happens to their allies like China and Syria and engage that group right now during a global meltdown. That would be really a lot of fun, wouldn't it? Matt is in Orange County, California. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Nancy. Yeah, here's the thing. Well, my first question is, how do people actually get paid to write nonsense like that? Because, I mean, I can pull opinions out of my butt, too. But the thing is, we're not going to make a move on North Korea because they have nuclear weapons. And the second thing is that China and South Korea won't let us do it, because if we do take him out, then that's going to cause a massive refugee problem, and that's where they're going to go. And neither of those countries want anything to do with, you know, 10 million North Koreans coming at them.
Right.
So, I mean, all we can really do at this point is just wait until Kim Jong-il dies and then hope that we can negotiate better with the next guy. I mean, we can't even stop Cuba from, you know, outsmarting us. I mean, how we're not going to mess with China. They own us.
You know, You got to keep an eye on the proliferation of this technology, obviously. And if there's, it's almost like what Obama did with the pirate situation was he gave the authority if that captain's life was in imminent danger to go ahead and shoot. And that's what we got to do. We have to monitor him. But also, here's another novel thing. I said this in jest the other day. I said, what about a iPod weapon system? And I'm serious about that. Iran, the president, he made a video to the people of Iran upon taking office and went directly to the people. And North Korea is so isolated because of their technology, obviously, and he's been able to sort of keep them in this bubble. How do we penetrate the communications bubble? I am serious about it. If they had Blackberries, if the people of North Korea could do sexting, forget it. Introduce sexting to North Korea. Now, I know that may seem a little crazy, but once those young people start sexting, which is text messaging, sexy messages, if you haven't learned the lingo of the last 2 weeks, and it could be dangerous if you're a young child, and we don't do that. But adults should be able to do that, I think. Or get iPods. Honestly, try and figure out how to penetrate the communications barrier. Then I'm okay with that. What's he going to do? I mean, when people start to realize that they have it that badly, and I think there's probably a way to do that. I don't know, but I'm sure there's got to be a way with the... I saw the movie the other night, Enemy of the State. Have you ever seen that with Gene Hackman and Will Smith?
No.
It's amazing. It's about the NSA and how vast their technology infrastructure really is, that they can get any phone call, they can pick up, intercept anything through electronic listening devices. If we can intercept sound, how can we not get information? How can we not smuggle computers and iPods and set up systems into that country? Is that a crazy question to ask?
No, it's awesome. We just do like a Berlin airdrop of like iPods and Blackberries and Nintendo Wiis and Taco Bell and
right and Netflix
and jeans.
All right, Matt. Thanks a lot. I do appreciate that. I'm sure somebody paid her good money to come up with writing that column. We need action, not words, on North Korea. Oh, that is so much easier to say when you're writing a column in the comfort of your own home and you don't have to deal with the aftermath of Iraq on steroids because they had nuclear weapons or they have nuclear technology or whatnot. A whole lot easier to say than to do. All right. Lisa has been hanging on for the longest time, and God bless you, Lisa. I agree with you. We should be talking about Bo the dog. There has not been enough oxygen delivered. This pooch is cute and adorable, and we're not talking about it enough, right?
No, well, the reason why I'm talking about it is because yesterday, I'm from Fullerton, Orange County, and I went to an estate sale, and there were these five really old women in front of me, and I know they're staunch Republicans, and they were ripping into Obama over the stupid dog.
Oh,
the most insane things.
Really?
Like,
that's funny. What exactly did they find fault with Bo?
Oh, well, first of all, they had a big problem that it was a Kennedy dog, and that he should have done the right thing, and you know, like he made the promise to the world that he was going to get a shelter mutt. Yeah, but because it was a Kennedy dog, he couldn't say no.
Really? Hey,
and,
you know what? You want to hear something cool, Lisa? I should Twitter this. Guess who called me this morning? Bobby Kennedy Jr. called me on my cell phone. He's going to be on the show coming up. So anyways, I don't know if that makes me on the target for the Tea Party crowd, but We're going to talk energy policy. Isn't that exciting? Anyway, so it was a Kennedy dog, so she's that's a mark against her, right?
Yeah, and then...
It's a him, right? Bo is a boy, is it?
Yeah, and but they just started chiming in like, well, you know, this is just a perfect example of how he's the president of not of change, but of broken promises. What? And then they made accusations like he doesn't want to do the right thing. He just wants to be a Kennedy. You know, he just wants to be buddy-buddies with the Kennedys, just like Schwarzenegger just wants to be part of the Kennedy family. I said, and the more I was listening to them, they were just talking absolute nonsense. And then I got, you know, I wanted to mock them, so I started chanting, you know, in line. There were like 30 people around me. Hey, let's impeach Obama because he has a Portuguese water dog. Let's do it, everybody. What do you say? Get the movement going, you know?
Did they hear you say that?
Yeah, of course. They were right in front of me, and they just stood there. And then I was struck by two things, and this is why I'm calling. One, there was a palpable undercurrent of racism, okay? Like, you know,
because the dog's color was black?
Yeah. Yeah, an African-American family expecting a dog, you know, from the Kennedys. Like, they weren't worthy of it. I really honestly felt that. It was very, thanks for saying this, had this racist tinge to them. And I was also struck by this, that this is why the Republican Party is not just an irrelevant party. It's a dead party. And, you know, their message of fear and ignorance and hatred doesn't resonate with most of America anymore because, you know, I mean, we're just becoming a more diverse and enlightened country as each day passes, and it's causing them to implode. You know, these stupid tea parties had nothing to do with, you know, taxes. It was an anti-Obama movement.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah.
And I say we do everything we can to help them, you know, on their way to implosion because it can't happen fast enough. As far as I'm concerned, I just can't take it anymore. They're just insane.
Well, so though that's, you actually raise a really important question that I grapple with every day because, you know, at a certain point, I've been watching the news coverage of all the, you know, the tea parties, and you got to listen. MSNBC, they spent all the time. Oh, you know, they went after Fox was pro. MSNBC covered Fox, giving Fox more airtime.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have to say one thing. I think Fox went way over any legitimate. This is coverage, and we're essentially the golden sponsor of the tea parties for their own ratings' sake. Absolutely, 100% agree to that. But you got to admit, MSNBC, there wasn't a whole lot of discussion about MSNBC adding Rod Blagojevich to their reality show lineup.
That's true.
You know,
that's
come
true.
On. Then there's
that's
like,
true.
Oh, yeah, by the way, Blago, we're going to have a celebrity Blago show. All right, come on, folks. There's got to be a little fairness here. That's a boneheaded thing. It's not on a scale of violation of what we think of as journalism, but it's pretty bad. It was the entertainment thing. But anyways, the thing about that you raise about Bo. Now, what is this controversy? I really, honestly haven't had time. Did they in fact promise to get a shelter dog? Because I don't think that was a promise. I think that was like, hey, you know what? We need a hypoallergenic dog.
Which I think there are very few. I don't think there are a lot of dogs that, you know. I don't think there are a lot of dogs that are like that.
Right.
I mean, just a few, you know, some poodles and a Portuguese water dog. But I don't think he made a promise to the world to get a shelter dog.
Yeah, I don't recall that being a promise. I was there, Lisa, at his election night. I went to Chicago, went from Detroit. I got my car, did my stuff, got there. I was, like, as close as you can get, because I was doing a Fox Business thing, and I was 30 feet from him standing up there or something like that, watching with this beautiful skyline and thousands of people just rejoicing that this change had finally come and this moment was there. And it was, like, one of the best moments of my entire life. It was 70 degrees, and he was giving this speech, and you felt great about being alive and being American at this moment. And he said, I'm going to, my girls, you deserve that puppy. I've promised you. And the crowd went wild, but I didn't remember hearing him say, it's going to be a shelter dog, and we don't want to get it from the Kennedys.
You know, who cares? Ultimately, who cares? It's just such a non-issue in regards to everything else that's going on in the world, you know?
No, that's why I'm kind of joking about my 3-hour Bo special in between North Korea and a global meltdown. But, Lisa, that was very funny, and I'm glad you spoke up to those women because you shamed them.
Sounded
like they needed a little shaming, so good for you, girl.
Thank you. I love your show.
Thanks a lot, Lisa. All right. 1-888-64-NANCY. The Bo saga. No, there really is. I'm going to Google it, see what I come up with here. I am sure. I'm gonna check that out on the break. Some right-wing blogs on Bo. This is pretty pitiful. If this is what you got Newt and Bo and Beck. Newt and Bo and Beck. That's it. So what are we wasting our time on? 1-888-64 Nancy, the number to the day, and that's 646-2629 or KTLKAM150.com if you need the new stream. That's what I said. I said KTLKAM1150.com. Didn't I? Krieger? No? Krieger's right. Okay, I'm wrong. It happens.
It's a great movie. He created my performance. He said he could sit through me. I spent 4 years prostrate to the higher mind. Got my paper and I was free. I went.
Critics. Let's see. and I have mine on the Nancy Skinner Show, believe it or not. 1-888-64 Nancy. 1-888-646-2629, the number to the program. We were just talking about Bo here. And Reggie writes in. Okay, Reggie, I know you've written me a couple times, so I'm gonna read it. You've been listening to the show since I began on this station. Initially, you enjoyed the change because you tend to be much more inclusive in your selection of guests and because you actually listen and engage people you disagree with. Here's what really drives me up the wall about you, Nancy. You're timid when it comes to talking about the really nitty-gritty of race, racism, and its connection to the emergence of the new radical right wing fomented by the likes of Glenn Beck. Now, I'm hoping, Reggie, you're not talking about this, that discussion about Bo and the tint of racism with a dog named Bo, and he's a black-haired dog. Because I just think that's absurd. I don't think that anybody can make a connection, a racist connection to a black dog, because, like, what, half of dogs are black? Black labs? I mean, or mixed-color kind of dogs? I mean, that's not... All right. Anyway. One of your earlier guests mentioned to you that the reason Michael Steele wasn't invited to participate in the Tea Parties was because he's black. I was stunned beyond belief at how dismissive you treated the comment. It felt to me as a black man that you're simply not interested in discussing the issue, period. No, Reggie, I think it's ludicrous. I don't think he was not invited because he was black. That would imply that I think that all Republicans are racists, even crazy right-wingers. Did not want him because he was black. He did get elected the chairman of the RNC. And we as a country elected a black president. At least you could have explained why you felt that your guest comment was unreasonable on its merits. Okay, sorry, I'm doing that now. All you did was brush it aside. Because sometimes things that don't make sense don't deserve a lot of oxygen. Where you fall short, in my humble opinion, is that you try too hard to keep things nice and light. I feel at times that you're comfortable burying your pretty head in the sand and pretending that the uncomfortable subjects don't exist in happy land where giggles and cuteness rule the day. I still enjoy your show, and I'll continue supporting your success, Nancy. I only wish you'd just let a little bit more of your boldness sneak into the studio with you. Well, Reggie, here's the deal. You know, I try to have a balance. Maybe I was a little too harsh with Claudia Rosette. Some people, when I asked her to give me an example of what it was. No, this isn't love letters, John. Good try. That's when I save those up. That's a special segment. No, this is a little bit. I try to treat people with respect, and when they're really wrong on points of substance, I go after it. Now, he had written me about the right-wing extremism and the racism, and I think Reggie had called the program at one point and talked about the, you know, possible harm to the president. I do not feed that on purpose, Reggie. So I because I believe, and I wanted to address this earlier, I believe that there is that there is something to feeding into that and riling those folks up. And I don't want anything ever that I do to be self-fulfilling prophecy. I think that this I'm not saying that issues of race don't continue to exist. And I do agree with you that I don't want to spend my time in ugly, nasty subjects. I mean, I take them on and try and bring some lightness because it is entertainment. That's my job. We all have problems in life. My job is to make a few hours a little lighter and get to understand a little more. That's why I explained that whole thing with the meltdown with Elizabeth Warren. But I'm not going to feed into anything that's worse. I'm not going to make a situation worse. So that's what I do. That's my deal. And I'm glad you're listening and glad you're writing me at NancySkinnerLive.com. And I appreciate your input. I read them all, believe it or not. And they make me think, so that's good. But I'm splaining myself and who I am. And that would be Nancy Skinner.
Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway announcement.
Do you have troubled skin? Acne? Well, against the better judgment of our management team, we're going to prove to you once and for all that Proactiv works. So if you want to try it, give us a call, because we're going to let a million people try Proactiv and receive our legendary refining face mask free if you call right now.
You heard it. Be one of the first callers and you'll receive a 60-day trial of Proactiv Solution risk-free, plus a free refining face mask when you call 1-800-689-3073.
Proactiv's combination therapy system uses prescription-grade acne medicine and soothing spa-quality botanicals to create a powerful acne-fighting system. It's so effective it transforms blemishes and bumps into clear, smooth skin.
You can have beautiful, healthy-looking skin. Put us to the test and we'll prove it. Get your risk-free 60-day trial plus a free refining face mask. Call toll-free now, 1-800-689-3073. That's 1-800-689-3073.
Today, Thursday, 1-888-64-NANCY, the number to the program, or 646-2629, 1-888, or NancySkinnerLive.com. Lots of email activity going on I don't often pay attention to. Greg writes in that he just tuned in on his BlackBerry using iHeartRadio, and I wanted to remind you all that this is fantastic, that if you have a BlackBerry or an iPod, you can listen to the program, Who Needs XM? You can listen to it on your iHeartRadio. That's the program. I think, I'll figure out how to get it, but it's an app. It's an app, a downloadable app. And you can listen to the show wherever you go. Bring it in your car and you can listen to the show. He writes in to say, that he heard me talking about right-wing blogs and Bo. Does this make a blog Bo the dog world? Or better yet, or worse, a bourgeois bitter bloggers on Bo the dog world? Excuse my poor alliterations. Hope they gave you a chuckle. They confused me, actually, Greg. But thanks for writing and reminding me to tell everyone about iHeartRadio. Yet another advancement in technology. Oops, we put a couple of satellites up in here. Costs billions of dollars. And then Bill Gates, or no, it was Steve Jobs came up with a little application. All right, we'll be getting to the political updates here of the day, the political news of the day. We're going to get to that now, Krieger, before I have other emails here that I've printed out that I will share with you. But before we do that, we need to get up to date on who's up, who's down, what's happening, where is the president, what's Bo up to, has he made an accident out on the lawn, all these important things. Helping us to do that is Shane DePriel, who is a senior editor. DeAprile? Okay, Krieger, I got it. Shane DeAprile, who's the senior editor of Politics Magazine, and he joins me now. Hi, Shane.
Hey, Nancy, how are you?
Is it DeAprile?
It is DeAprile, yes. That's fine, though. It's a tough name to say. Nobody gets it right.
Well, it seems like it's a French origin, the way it's spelled, right?
It's actually Italian, but most people think it is French.
Oh, we'll see. Well, I guess I'm not alone then, Shane. We're just happy you're here. We're happy to have you.
I'm happy to be here.
Okay. So what's going on now? President Obama is making his first ever trip to Latin America. Hola, ¿cómo está? Una cerveza, por favor, right down there. What is the agenda there?
Well, I think one thing that you're probably going to see, Nancy, is that a lot of certainly the media coverage and some of the coverage in the American news is going to be focused a lot on Cuba. It was obviously a big story about a week or so ago when the administration has been talking for a while now about sort of softening its stance on Cuba and softening relations and easing some of the restrictions. That's generated quite a bit of debate in Congress. There are,
Where is that, though, Shane? Really, who is upset by that? Is that just the Florida politicians I saw? Debbie Wasserman Schultz and others on TV, but isn't that issue, that is so, we are so past that, are we not?
Well, it's interesting because there are so many competing interests on that particular question, Nancy, and it isn't, obviously the Florida politicians are the folks who are making the most noise about it, so to speak, but even you see a New Jersey senator, Bob Menendez, who sort of came up in North Jersey politics and was mayor of a town with an incredibly large Cuban-American population in North Jersey when he first started in politics, and he's very against any sort of easing of restrictions or any of the, increased economic ties with Cuba.
Is it his Cuban constituents, or is it anyone who wants to run for presidency has to toe the line on the Cuba policy? Is that how you know someone's going to be a candidate for the president is the minute they come out?
Yeah, I think it's certainly a bit...
Crack down on Castro!
But I think it is definitely, certainly with Senator Menendez, it is quite a bit about his constituents. I mean, he gains a lot of support financially and otherwise from Cuban Americans in New Jersey and across the country. So, I mean, I think that it's... So it's a political question for, some Democrats, and a crucial one for some Democrats who are not only, they don't necessarily just have to represent Florida either. But then again, there are some Republicans, Nancy, in more rural states who are actually in favor of easing some of the economic restrictions. They want to, open up sort of, Cuba as a market for, products for farmers from their states. So it's an interesting question, but my guess is that the Cuba issue is going to sort of dominate certainly the coverage of what happens over the next couple of days.
Okay, so he's going. What's his first stop? Is Mexico, right? He's going to Mexico City.
Right. Yes.
Now obviously that's a pretty big issue because of the emergence of the drug cartels. And so what do you say there? I mean, obviously this is a friendly nation and they're trying their best to get a handle on this, President Calderon, right? So what's he going to say to him that makes sense from the American perspective?
Well, I have to say that I'm a lot more interested in sort of some of the internal politics. And this is not to dodge your question, Nancy, but mm-hmm. I mean, what I do here is, you know, we focus so much on sort of, you know, the internal politics between folks in the administration, and we're so campaign oriented that I'm
right.
always thinking in that mode. So one of the things I'm so interested to see in how the president handles this is that this is sort of the first this is going to be a major interaction. You're going to see this juxtaposition between President Obama and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. And with everything that's been going on with the economy, there has been very little focus. And I don't think there's been much of an opportunity to focus on the relationship and the back and forth between the Secretary of State and the President. And I don't know if you know, listeners to your show think that maybe folks in the media or maybe, you know, conservative hosts or people on the right, you know, talk that up a little too much. But I've been very interested to see where, you know, if there's going to be a tension at any point in that relationship. And you know, this is particularly an issue with Mexico and the drug cartels that the Secretary of State has come out on and spoken on quite a bit. And she's been sort of the voice of this. And we always look as political reporters to see whether or not when the president goes down there and speaks about things, are they perfectly in sync? Are the two of them on the same
right.
page with public statements and what they're saying to other leaders? And that's actually what I'm looking for.
Well, that is pretty intriguing, Shane, because, you know, on the G20 tour, the world tour, what was mm-hmm. interesting that day that he was, when he went to Paris and met Nicosi and his wife, Carla Bruni, and there was
right.
the Bruni, Michelle Obama fashion smackdown,
right.
and all
yeah.
the video. You know, I was really shocked. All that discussion, and we talked about all that as well. The Hillary was there in the video. I mean, she
right.
was there in the entourage, and that never, in all of my following of the coverage, I didn't even know. I mean, obviously it makes sense. She's Secretary of State, and this is the G20,
right.
and but nobody even mentioned her, let alone who she was wearing. You know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's it was so overshadowed by, you know, the Michelle. You know, incident, that interaction, like you suggest, but also, you know, equally as talked about was the, sort of perceived cold reception maybe that President Obama got from, President Sarkozy's wife. So, I mean, it was, yeah, and
what was the controversy there that he was, he should have kissed her on both cheeks and he didn't?
Oh, I think to the best of my recollection, it was that she pulled back from a ceremonial kiss or something like that. I mean, I don't know. I'm not claiming that it's important. I don't think it is. But it is interesting that you would not think that Hillary Clinton would be in any way marginalized on these foreign trips,
yeah.
or be in the background, or that you wouldn't know by the news coverage that she was there. But yeah, that's happening. It's fascinating.
Was she involved in the pirate, sniper pirate situation?
Yeah.
Yes, she was.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the really important question. I think you guys got to get to the bottom of this before we continue.
Yeah.
With Shane D. April, the senior editor of Politics Magazine, which is a great, great roundup of all kinds of things going on in the world. Does Hillary Clinton have President Obama's BlackBerry number?
That, you know, that's a actually great question. We've got to find that out. I know there's a very, I think there's less than 10 people who
right.
have that contact.
Yeah.
You would think that perhaps she's one of, but, you know, maybe if you're President Obama, you don't want her to have it. I don't know.
You take the 3 a.m. call.
Right.
All right. More about the trip and other things going inside and out. Politics Magazine, Shane D. April, our senior editor, is going to get us updated while we've spent so much time on Bo the dog. Hang on, Shane. 1-888-64, Nancy, the number to the program, or 646-2629. That's 1-888-664-6269. All righty, chop, chop, chop. Let's get going here. Let's get the dirt, political dirt, from Shane D'April, senior editor of Politics Magazine on the Nancy Skinner Show. 1-888-646-2629, the number to the program. So, Shane, I am looking, perusing monsterjobs.com, and I do not see Norm Coleman's resume up there quite yet. What gives?
He's not giving up yet, and he doesn't show any signs of wanting to just yet. I mean, this is, you know, this is one of those stories, Nancy, that I think has gone on for so long at this point that it's almost sort of, you know, I mean, unless you're covering it every day, unless you're covering the Senate, unless you're, you know, a reporter from Minnesota, I think that has almost been lost a bit on this story. I know here at the Politics Magazine, I mean, we've covered it, you know, here and there when something major happens as far as one of the rulings or, you know, but this is just sort of the endless campaign court fight.
It's embarrassing. And there's a new poll out you have on your website here that says 63% of voters in Minnesota think that Coleman should step aside. 59% think that the governor, Tim Pawlenty, should declare Franken the winner. You know, that what's weird about that is, right, one, I think that, you know, this is, if you are Norm Coleman, someone get him a copy of Dude, They're Just Not That Into You, because clearly, you know, he's lost. It would seem like the sheer fortitude that he has to have to keep going when nobody thinks he has a chance. What's driving that? That's one question. And the second one is, Tim Pawlenty's a pretty moderate. I've met him. He seems like a very moderate, reasonable guy. He's not like a whack job. So why would he be buying into this game?
Well, I think that it's not much of a secret that Governor Pawlenty might possibly want to be president. And I don't think that he wants to anger a Republican base in this country right now that is very fired up about a lot of things on the national level. So I think it is, I think that, you know, you're going to sort of, you know, stand by your man, so to speak, and your party's man in the state. And right now, Norm Coleman is still that for Republicans. I mean, I think the broader thing here, Nancy, and the more interesting thing is that we are in this phase with elections now where, you know, this is not all that surprising. It's not, you know, I mean, you see what happened in New York 20 and how close that still is. I mean, the estimated lead up there now was, last I saw, was 35 votes. I mean,
really?
Who's up
in that race in 20?
Last I saw was Scott Murphy by 35 votes, and obviously that was that wasn't any sort of an official tally. That was just an estimate based on the counting that was still going on and the, you know, overseas absentees and everything else. But
after,
you know,
figuring, I mean, the power of Rush Limbaugh intervening in that race.
Yeah, that's an interesting race and one that is really for Republicans a pretty tough one to swallow. I mean, that was a district that obviously it has not been completely resolved, certainly, but it's, you know, just the fact that it is this close is a blow for Republicans, because this is a district where, you know, the partisan registration advantage for Republicans in that district was 70,000 plus.
Right.
I mean, that's huge. So, and you were looking at a Democrat in Scott Murphy who was not particularly well known throughout the district. It's going to be a very difficult loss for Republicans if, in fact, Scott Murphy goes on to officially be declared the winner there at some point.
Okay, last question. We don't have a whole lot of time here, but I have to get my. We are in Juneau, Alaska. This show is carried in Juneau, so I have to get your thoughts on John McCain dissing Sarah Palin on Jay Leno. Did you, you know, among the contenders, she wasn't named. Was that a senior moment? Was that reality?
I don't think so. I don't think it was much of a senior moment. I think that it was probably. I don't know that when she was picked, I'm not sure that Senator McCain knew what he was getting into. And I think that
you can say that about her husband Todd too. I'm sure.
There's probably some resentment there. I probably something I shouldn't speculate on, but I don't think it was a mistake. I don't think that you're going to see Senator McCain, sort of going all around the country carrying the banner for Governor Palin if she does decide to run in 2012.
Those two aren't sexting each other, then, I take it. So the love is gone.
I don't think so.
All right, Shane. I'm sorry to do it to you, but I'm getting punchy on a Thursday. Shane D. April, senior editor of Politics Magazine, a great website, .com. Thanks, Shane. Appreciate it. Come back and join us. Okay, great. 1-888-64-NANCY. I'm sorry. Come on. It just made sense. I'll hear about it at AnthonyKinnerLive.com.
In less than an hour, aircraft from here will join others from around the world. And you will be launching the largest aerial battle in the history of mankind. Mankind, that word should have new meaning for all of us today. We can't be consumed by our petty differences anymore. We will be united in our common interest. Perhaps fate that today is the 4th of July, and you will once again be fighting for our freedom. Not from tyranny, oppression, or persecution, but from annihilation. We're fighting for our right to live, to exist. And should we win the day, the 4th of July will no longer be known as an American holiday, but as the day when the world declared in one voice, we will not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight. We're going to live on. We're going to survive. Today, we celebrate our Independence Day.
And that, my friends, is what Detroit is celebrating, their independence. At some point, and this is the reason I'm thinking of this on the Nancy Skinner Show, is that Krieger, leave me alone. There is a point here that I'm thinking this surgical bankruptcy thing through, right? And I'm thinking, you know, this is the idea of going in and doing the surgical bankruptcy. It's like the movie The Independence Day, where they actually had to go in Will Smith had to infect this asteroid with some virus to lower its immunity so that they could fly a nuclear weapon right at the exact spot and blow up this asteroid, and somehow then we were saved. That's kind of the challenge we have before us in terms of the upcoming, should it come to pass, so-called surgical bankruptcy with the auto industry, in my view. That is my analogy, and I'm sticking to it on the Nancy Skinner Show. 1-888-64-NANCY, the number to the program. I talked about yesterday the idea that everyone's, you know, blaming the retirees, and they haven't come to the table. You see me on Fox News saying that in fact they have come to the table. And who do you think is going to pay for the retirees? Do you think that they're going to be able to go into bankruptcy and just all these people who have spent their whole lives and now are relying on this are going to be just strewn aside? Or do you think that the taxpayer will somehow have a responsibility anyways? So we might as well have a going concern than just paying for these retiree benefits. And lo and behold, there was a piece today in the Detroit News by David Shepherdson, who is with the Washington Bureau of the Detroit News, about the fact that the Pension Insurance Agency, the feds, who do insure those pensions, are quite concerned about just that possibility. And David joins me now. Hi, David. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Nancy.
So tell us, when we were talking about for GM and Chrysler, You point out that that we're talking about providing pension benefits to about 630,000 retirees and dependents, and another 300,000 who haven't even begun drawing those. Them's some big numbers to say, well, we're just going to wipe that out and let these people fend for themselves on the streets.
No, you're right. It's a huge number. It has a major impact on Michigan and other states with a lot of retirees. And it's important to know that the people who get hardest hit are the youngest retirees, because the way the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation insurance works is you get a higher benefit the older you are. So at age 65, the government insures a maximum of $54,000 a year in pension benefits, but if you're, say, 50 and you might be a 30 and out early retiree from GM or Chrysler, you get a maximum of $18,900. Secondly, the fund does not cover supplemental benefits, additional payments that the companies give for help to pay for health care benefits or other supplemental benefits that the UAW has negotiated. They only pay the core pension benefits. So even people who are not necessarily at the top of the benefit number could still see some reductions. And then when you look at the total numbers between Chrysler and GM and their unfunded pension liabilities, mm-hmm. if the pension plans were turned over to the government, the government would pay a total of $6 billion of the $23 billion in liabilities, which means the employee retirees would end up losing a total over many years of $17 billion in benefits. So a huge number.
Yeah, on a human scale, if you are retired and you no longer have the ability to make a living, and your earnings were cut by that percentage, what do you do? There's obviously going to be you have Social Security, I suppose. That's it, right?
Right, you're right.
Or Taco Bell.
And the hardest thing are for the people who haven't gotten a Social Security and Medicare. Those 50, 55-year-old retirees who still have to buy their own insurance, who haven't gotten to 62 or 65. And you're right, those folks, and by the way, they're the people who are having the most difficulty finding jobs in the unemployed 45 and older. There's a new report that says they have the most difficulty getting new jobs. So, right, this hits a group that often has kids maybe in college, or maybe they had kids later in life, still have kids at home. So, yeah, it's very worrisome.
Yeah. And so they have fear and anxiety, but also the Pension Benefit Corporation, the federal agency that insures those pensions, have some fears coming their way because they're essentially upside down to begin with right now.
Well, a couple things going on. One, there are $11 billion in the hole, the deficit. But don't forget, at least in the short term, they're not going to be able to stop paying any money because they have $60 billion in assets. But the real problem is we all know about our 401ks and how badly they did last year. Well, think about the entire U.S. pension system and all of those pensions that are invested in the stock markets. Well, we still don't know the total results, but there are some estimates that all those pensions funds last year lost over $300 billion in assets. So it's a real ticking time bomb because there are so many pensions out there who are now deeply underfunded. I mean, GM, to its credit, up until last year had a fully funded pension fund, and then the stock market tanked, and they all of a sudden, in 12 months, they went from fully funded to being underfunded by $20 billion. So, this is a problem down the road. No one knows where it ends. Does the government have to bail out the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation? Who knows?
Yeah, and it's a self-reinforcing cycle here because if say there is a bankruptcy of the auto industry, that's going to have a ripple effect on lots of other industries and where they have pension situations, and it's going to have a huge shock to the financial markets, as I've been trying to tell everybody. GM bankruptcy, those words are going to have a psychological impact on the market that's lasting. And so then those 401ks, therefore, those pension, the value of those pension assets are reduced and are more upside down. And I don't think, David, that people, they just don't understand the complexity of this issue.
Yeah, right. It's been given this bumper sticker, as you point, surgical bankruptcy, quick rinse, 2 weeks in and out.
Yeah.
And you're right. I mean, there are certainly advantages to bankruptcy. I mean, clearly GM and Chrysler have way too much debt. They've got to do something to get out from under all that debt, and they've got to convince the bondholders and the UAW to make concessions. That's clear. But there are a lot of unknowns in bankruptcy, and it's been sort of portrayed as largely risk-free, and it's not just the pensions. It's once you go down that bankruptcy road, there's a lot of uncertainty. No one knows, how the thing winds up. And take Delphi, the big auto supplier in Troy, they went into bankruptcy in October 2005, and they're still in bankruptcy. And so, once you go in, there's no guarantee you can get out quickly.
4 years later, now you guys are reporting at the Detroit News that GM is preparing to make official bond exchange offer. What's that?
Well, that's just, this is what we're talking about in terms of you know, making these concessions on their debt. GM has about $29 billion in bonds, in debt they owe, and they've got to shrink that under the terms of their loans with the Obama administration. So, they're going to offer stock in the company to swap that for the debt. So you get rid of a lot of debt on your balance sheet in exchange for giving new shares of stock in the company to the bondholders. So they end up getting a chunk of the company, but they lose the principal that they were expecting. So clearly the bondholders don't want to lose the money, and that's sort of the threat. If they don't get the concessions, then they go into bankruptcy, and then bankruptcy bondholders often get very little. So it's kind of a game of chicken now.
Because they're unsecured, right? But
exactly.
The problem over at Chrysler is that the banks, we've been covering this, that Chase, Citigroup, these guys have secured debt,
right.
And they would rather force liquidation and take the assets, make more money, and because, you know, bankruptcy, they're secured. They're good to go.
Well, they're not going to get one-to-one, certainly, and it's a different game of chicken there, but you're right. They have liens against Chrysler's assets, their headquarters in Auburn Hills, and the plants, their intellectual property, like the Jeep brand, and you're right. They're in a much better position to force Chrysler and the government to give them more money. So in that case, Chrysler's been offering about 15 cents on the dollar, whereas GM's expected to offer basically no cash to its bondholders, because you're right, they're not secured.
Right. So where is this all heading? I mean, this seems like, like I said, the Independence Day, but it seems like a monster game of chicken as the time approaches. You get to a point where the clock is, you know, when you get to the two-minute warning, there's almost, is it going to increase the pressure for a deal, or do things just sort of unravel at that point?
You know, I just think it's too, you know, you can make an argument either way. I mean, clearly there's the government, the Chrysler, Fiat, they want a deal to happen. There's only 2 weeks left, and I think it's probably a better than 50-50 chance that happens. At GM, you know, a lot of the signs do point to bankruptcy. They're running out of time. They've got 6 weeks, but these bondholders are playing real hardball, and unfortunately, maybe without bankruptcy, you don't have the tools to prod these guys into making the concession. So,
Does the government have any tools whatsoever in the loans, the conditions of the loans? Do they have not any enforcement mechanisms against the bondholders? Because they seem to have, you know, the ability with banks, and we're taking on all kinds of new authorities. Nothing against the bondholders. The bondholders could force this company into bankruptcy.
Pretty much. I mean, they signed. You know, a bond is like a legal contract, and you know, I mean, you're right. With the banks, they've been able to, you know, they've got a little more leverage because the banks took TARP money, but these bondholders, you know, the government can, you know, basically all they have is really sort of, you know, the court of public opinion. Can you convince these guys do they want to be blamed? You know, some big, you know, pension funds.
Can we get the names? Is this public information?
Because
it's a public company. How do I get the names of the bondholders who have the gun to our head here?
Some of them are public record. Yeah, we should, you know, some of those we can get.
How do we get those? How do you get that information? Because I'm going to get that information.
Well,
I want people to know who's doing this.
It's reported by some of the pensions. The pensions themselves disclose their top assets, especially publicly traded funds, like the California CalPERS pension fund.
Okay. So, you know, if you get those links, would you get that to me? Because we can start getting this on websites. We want people to know who's doing this and so who these bondholders are. That's all. Just so that they can get public input. How's that?
Okay. We'll do it, Anthony.
Great. David Shepardson is the Washington Bureau reporter of the Detroit News, and I found that to be very interesting. Thanks, David, that people aren't thinking about the whole pension thing. Like we're going to just go into... I love these stories. This is a New York Times one. Surgical bankruptcy possible for GM, New York Times reports. Yeah. Theoretically, we can destroy that asteroid with a nuclear weapon once we've lowered its immunity by inserting a virus. Theoretically, it's possible. Not likely. So that would be interesting. That's what our program is. Who are these GM bondholders? Remember we talked about Chrysler and Chase? They're secure. These guys are not secure. They're just playing a monster game of chicken with the entire economy, these bondholders, diverse as they are, individuals and institutions, they're not budging. And we don't want to see what happens if we have to put the nuclear weapon into the center of the asteroid.
Everybody gets low. These are the days when shaking cold. These hands are meant to hold.
All right. Surgical bankruptcy. For General Motors, New York Times piece on this that I've been marveling at. As this is the word. The goal is to prepare a fast surgical bankruptcy. Tell me that my analogy to Independence Day is not apt here. This is the goal. This is the plan. Because the bondholders are holding out, okay, in this case. And so, essentially, the government who has already, they've already got, like, what, GM, $13.4 billion in loans on the table. So the plan is to have a quick surgical. Treasury officials are looking at splitting the company into two companies, a good GM, which enters and exits bankruptcy protection in as little as 2 weeks, using $5 to $7 billion in federal financing. And then there's a bad GM, and that will be... that will have the unlucrative, because the good GM will have like Chevy and all that technology, the Volt and their Chinese market, which is booming. The bad GM will have all of the obligations like pensions and health care and some of their assets that aren't performing so well. It would be liquidated over several years. The rest of that, the bad GM, may require as much as $70 billion in government financing. And possibly more to resolve the health care obligations and the liquidation of the factories, according to legal experts and federal officials. Now, Fritz Henderson, he's going to give an update tomorrow on what's, you know, where they are. But I'll tell you what, is it conceivably possible, yes, that you are able to somehow go to bankruptcy, force these bondholders just to liquidate their assets, turn around and move on? Split the company into good and bad and do all, you know what? This is entropy, which is a term, it's a thermodynamic term. And it's like, it means energy dissipates. That's the law of the universe. It doesn't concentrate energy by itself. It dissipates. And when you open this door called bankruptcy and you try to do this surgical bankruptcy, and break it into two companies and raggle, you're gonna have an entropic event. You are gonna have a dissipation of energy, and you will start to see things like, as my guest just talked about, you will start to see suppliers, Delphi, Lear, I could go on and on, who are right themselves on the edge of bankruptcy. You're gonna see them topple. Then they're gonna take other automotive suppliers with them. And they're going to take advertising agencies down with them. And that's going to take more newspapers and more radio stations down with them. And mom-and-pop stores down with them as well. So, you know, back it all up. Back the whole thing up. I mean, the movie was a movie, Independence Day. What are the odds that we could actually really pull that off? You know, infest an asteroid with the virus and then hit it smack dab on with a nuclear weapon to save ourselves. Really? Okay, this is Bill Pullman. It's like Will Smith. It's a movie. Now we're talking about having that same sort of feat. A quick surgical bankruptcy of General Motors, the largest industrial asset in the country, with entrenched interests across the globe in 2 weeks. My odds are on Will Smith. So I would much prefer to see this people come to their senses, and I'm going to find out who these bondholders are. It's just public information. It's a publicly traded company. Why not? Because that's the easiest point of intervention at this point, not the surgical bankruptcy on the other end. All right. Thank God tomorrow is Friday. And we'll be back to discuss it all and more on The Nancy Skinner Show.